are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialised fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. Our current serial is The Bromances, and this is episode 8, which I think means we're about halfway through. I think. Don't, like, take that to the bank or anything, but... I remember the days when I used to finish a story before I started publishing it. Those were less scary days. Okay, The Bromances, episode 8. Hebe and the very big, completely fine, no big deal. On the bright side, Juniper wasn't missing anymore, according to the mirror message that Sage swiped in my direction, before herring off towards a beer or a drummer or whatever else was distracting him right now. Juniper was not dead in a ditch. So that was good. On the completely also bright side, my boyfriend had unexpectedly arrived at Winterfest, despite me repeatedly checking that this wasn't something he was planning to do. Surprises are romantic, apparently. "Didn't you have plans with your parents today?" I asked, still trying to catch up with these news developments. "Yeah, that's not a thing anymore," Ferd said quickly. "No big deal." Does anyone ever say no big deal when a thing is really no big deal? I opened my mouth to push further on the whole no big deal question, then I realised I hadn't kissed him yet and did that instead. Kissing him was nice, even if my mind was already spinning forward onto the logistics of sleeping arrangements now and, oh, hell. "Are Viola and Jules here too?" I asked very casually. "No big deal." "Yep, they're excited to see the bands," said Ferd. "Now, I know this is a hassle for you." "Oh, no," I started to say, because it was that, or grabbing him by the collar to howl, "Why didn't you say you were coming so I could plan for it?" "But I promise we won't mess up your camping game plan or anything. We won't be any extra trouble. It's all sorted." Well, that was ominous. "When you say all sorted," I started to say, "like, I told them you had this whole plan and we weren't factored into it, so we're going to have to look after ourselves." "And when you say look after yourselves, you mean staying at a nearby hotel?" The thought of Jules Nightshade and Viola Vale attempting to camp brought me out in hives. They did know that camping happened outdoors, didn't they? Why were they even here? "No, they're back at the campsite, setting up our gear, I promise. You don't have to worry about a thing." He kissed the top of my head. "Want to go pick a band to watch? Who's on this afternoon?" "I think," I said slowly, "I think I just want to just pop back to the campsite and check everything's..." "No," Ferd said, "too quickly. I mean, we have all this plan, whole plan, so we don't make any extra work for you." "I was heading back there anyway." I tapped my hand mirror and shoved it in a pocket. "Sage found Juniper, so that's where I'm going." "Sure," said my boyfriend, looking uncomfortable. "Just do what you were going to do. I won't get in your way." I tried not to break into a run as we headed back to camp. It even smelled different. My magic started making small, whimpery noises as I approached the campsite, my calm, simple, low-key campsite. There was a large rolled-up flying carpet leaning against a gorse bush as we headed up the path. It smelled of wealth and privilege. Musty, like they'd stolen it from a museum. "We may have made a few improvements," Ferd called apologetically from behind me. Colour burst across my eyeballs. As I stepped into our cosy, low-key bush clearing, the one I'd been so pleased to secure. Where we'd previously had three large tents and one small tent set up in a semicircle around the fire pit, plus a large tarpaulin area for beanbag lounging, which could be quickly cleared away for band practice, well, now there were two extra tents, bright green, so brand new that they squeaked. There was also a pavilion. It was the only word for it. It was made of what looked like Indian silks, exploding in colour, Comfort, decadence, warmth rolled off it, with a spicy scent that suggested protection and relaxation and heating charms. Giant pillows spilled out of it onto the campground, which was apparently tiled now in marble. Deck, the traitor, lay sprawled on the cushions with a very animated Viola Vale lying half on top of him, chatting lazily. Their relationship made no sense to me, but apparently his type was smart and spiky, while hers was super chill gamer geek. May was perched in one of several brand new canvas chairs, the kind that fold up so small with one containment rune that they can fit in your pocket. She was buried in one of her mirrors, too distracted to even look up. So nothing new there. Jules Nightshade sat at my campfire, his feet on a stool, looking proud of himself. He was eating some kind of panini, which clearly came from the silver 5-minute meal cauldron that hung over our campfire, having displaced my family's enchanted porridge pot, now sitting forlornly on the sidelines. "We may have gone overboard," said Ferd behind me, sounding uncomfortable. "It all looks great," I said, which was true. They'd done a really good job of accommodating themselves. I should be pleased. The trouble with domestic magic, and this is another embarrassing revelation, is that it's inherently competitive. It doesn't just want the people around it to be comfortable and well looked after. It wants to be the one responsible for that. I'd indulged my magic in setting up camp for the band, something I rarely did, and now it was awake and howling at how Jules Bloody Nightshade had wandered in with his endless budget and glamorous tastes and changed everything. It wasn't mine anymore. It's possible I have a domestic magic problem. But that wasn't Ferd's fault. It wasn't even Jules and Viola's fault. They tried to be helpful. They hadn't done anything wrong. It was no big deal. It should be no big deal. I turned to smile at him to say how nice it all was, to smooth over the horrible feeling that I wanted to burst into tears. Luckily for me, because that would have required a feat of acting I wasn't sure I was capable of, Holly interrupted. I had never been so grateful in my life for her terrible sense of timing. "Hebe, we have a big freaking problem with Juniper." "I still don't see the problem," I said 10 minutes later. Ferd had been remarkably understandable that I had to go with Holly and her crisis, because that was what I was here for. We'd catch up later. He was a good boyfriend. I almost certainly wasn't avoiding him now that he was here. What I hadn't expected was that Holly's crisis was actually a crisis. She was freaking out, and I hadn't yet managed to nail down exactly why. "I don't see how you can queue for coffee like a normal person when Juniper is clearly under some kind of evil curse," Holly hissed at me, joggling up and down as we waited in line at the Cirque de Cacao beverage truck. "Possibly she offended a fairy. These things happen all the time." "I need coffee," I said in a calm, steady voice, "because otherwise my magic is going to break up with my boyfriend." "Oh." She hesitated and looked closer at me. "Crap, the Basilisk Kings kind of messed up your campsite, didn't they?" "It's no big deal," I said. "Why don't you just explain to Ferd that your magic is a House Witch magazine control freak that needs to be in charge of everyone else's comfort? Or I could drink a double latte and get over myself." "Double latte, please," I added to Evan, the nice goth barista who was manning the truck today. "Hey, Evan," said Holly impatiently, her attention still on me. "Hey, Holly," said the barista, and frothed some milk quickly to cover up the fact that while we were equal regulars at the bricks and mortar version of Cirque de Cacao, Holly's was the only name he remembered. That's not unusual for us. Decaf? He asked, in case I wanted to roll back my order. Nope, I said. Got a couple of orders queued up. It'll be about 3 minutes. I'll have a cinnamon chock froth, Holly told him, and dragged me aside. Can you just pause your drama while I tell you about mine? Wow, I think that's the first time you've ever asked me that instead of assuming. Cute. So, Juniper is not acting like herself. Ever since she went missing, she's been off. You mean since you ditched her to flirt with an attractive older lady with a guitar? The love of my life, yes. Seriously, Hebe, I tried to talk to Junie just now, and she completely brushed me off to go listen to Charmed Life with some other girl. I looked at Holly, patiently, waiting for her to hear herself. She had apparently finished her argument. Her eyes were wide and her hands were expressive. I'm glad she's making friends, I said finally. Is that all you have to say? There's something wrong, Hebe. Juniper never acts like that around me. She wasn't acting like Juniper. So she stopped letting you take her for granted and treat her like a doormat for 5 seconds, and you think she's under a curse. Holly looked like I had slapped her. That's not fair. It's not inaccurate. Cinnamon chock froth for Holly, Evan called out from the beverage truck, and a double actual caffeine latte. I stomped over to the truck, paid for both drinks, and started downing my latte before I even handed Holly her cup of chocolate. The itchy discomfort that had been clawing at me since I realized what Jules Nightshade and the others had done to my campsite finally began to ebb. I know I'm right, Holly said softly beside me. So, fix it, I told her. It's not always my job to fix things. Take some initiative. It was nothing. Obviously it was nothing. Genuinely no big deal. But it wouldn't hurt Holly to focus on someone other than herself for 10 minutes. Brace yourself, Juniper. Holly's coming to save you. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. This month, being July 2017, my Patreon supporters at the $2 a month and above level are all going to be receiving a special Patreon exclusive Fake Geek Girl prequel story about how the band got together and other prequely goodness things. So if that's something that interests you, that's going to be for Patreon backers only. Links in the show notes. Okay. See you all next week. Well, I promise, next week there's going to be a Juniper point of view chapter. I know, I felt actually really bad about how long I've been stringing this out. I didn't think through the consequences of this being a serialized story. So, Juniper, next week. I promise. See you then.